This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Even though we are doing everything we can, it's just a drop in the ocean compared to the needs, not just in Sudan, but regionally. Around 36 million people have been pushed into hunger because of this ongoing war.
That was Lenny Kinsley, the World Food Program's Sudan spokesperson, on the challenges of dealing with the food crisis from the country's conflict. Details coming up. Also, the general debate of the 79th session of the General Assembly has begun today. And Israel launched massive new airstrikes against Hezbollah militants in Lebanon yesterday, killing at least 490 people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The general debate of the 79th session of the General Assembly has begun today, and our UN correspondent in New York, Margaret Bashir, starts out by describing to me what to expect in terms of speeches.
So this week we're going to hear from about 194 leaders, and the UN includes 76 heads of state and 42 prime ministers among them, but only 19 will be speaking at the podium in the General Assembly. And I think that we're going to hear from the Secretary General about that. Gender equality is one of his big issues, and it's a very sad number, 19 female leaders at the podium in the General Assembly in 2024.
Margaret, the theme this year is leaving no one behind, acting together for the advancement of peace, sustainable development, and human dignity for present and future generations. Could you expound on that?
Right. Well, I think we'll hear a lot about that, especially from leaders in the global south. Still several countries that are still recovering from the COVID pandemic. Their economies suffering, development fell behind during the COVID period. So there are a lot of countries playing catch up. I think we'll hear about them asking for more international solidarity and support on that front.
And Margaret, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres yesterday called for urgent reform of the Security Council, criticizing its outdated structure and lack of representation for Africa, which he argued undermines the body's credibility and global legitimacy. So is there any chance African countries will be part of the Security Council?
Permanent members on the council from Africa has gained momentum. It's time to bring them into the 21st century and make them more reflective of what the world's power balance looks like today. This will take time. Let's just be clear. It's already taken decades to get to this point. It's not going to happen overnight.
And also the general debate we mentioned earlier, the 79th session of the General Assembly has begun today. So with the situation in Sudan and, of course, Ukraine, and now Israel and Hezbollah militants in Lebanon edging towards all-out war, what is the mood there at the assembly with these kind of situations lingering in our globe?
Tension in the Middle East, a great worry that this could just explode and become a regional war. The match has been lit. There's been so much escalation in the past week. The Americans are working hard behind the scenes to get a ceasefire still for Gaza, which is what diplomats are saying is the key to this, that if you can stop Gaza, ceasefire in Gaza, then you can calm down these other militant groups dying to support Hamas fight against Israel and escalate the region. We heard from you, Foreign Minister Borrell, last night, and this was one of the key points he was making.
That was VOA's UN correspondent in New York, Margaret Bashir, speaking with me from New York. A short time ago, U.S. President Joe Biden gave his last speech to the UN General Assembly. He urged the world to seek an end to conflicts endangering millions of people in Sudan, the Middle East, and Ukraine.
In Sudan, a bloody civil war unleashed one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. 8 million on the brink of famine. Hundreds of thousands already there. Atrocities in Darfur and elsewhere. The United States has led the world in providing humanitarian aid to Sudan. And with our partners, we've led diplomatic talks to try to silence the guns and avert a wider famine. The world needs to stop arming the generals, to speak with one voice and tell them, stop tearing your country apart, stop blocking aid to the Sudanese people, end this war now.
He also urged world leaders to join to fight health threats, including the growing Mpox outbreak in Central and Eastern Africa.
We must now move quickly to face Mpox outbreak in Africa. We're prepared to commit $500 million to help African countries prevent and respond to Mpox and to donate 1 million doses of Mpox vaccine now. We call on our partners to match our pledge and make this a billion-dollar commitment to the people of Africa.
Throughout his speech, Biden struck an optimistic note, saying that nations working together can solve shared problems. Biden ended his campaign for re-election several weeks ago and will leave office in January 2025 after the November presidential election. He first entered national politics as a U.S. senator in 1973. In Nairobi, some people say the world leaders gathered in New York for the U.N. General Assembly need to do more for Africa. Reporter James Shimanyula spoke with people in the Kenyan capital to hear what they want U.N. officials to know. Ispa Mutiso is concerned about the conflicts on the continent and how they often are linked to the resources of many countries.
One thing which I would like to appeal to the world to help Africa, one, it is about getting rid of the wars, which basically they are being brought in by the interest of other continents. For example, we have got the rich country called Congo, rich in minerals. Everything they need, it is there. But instead of negotiating with that country so that they can buy and purchase everything, well, indulge in war. And it is my prayer that even the world leaders, all over, they should see what is in Africa and also what is in Africa should help the world. Because Africa itself is rich, but there are many, let me call them hyenas, who are hiding minerals in Africa. Everything is found here, but instead of negotiating to make it as a marketable, they want to make a war. Let them get into marketing of our minerals in Africa, not bringing wars.
Rupia Bolle is worried about the decline in international help to build economies on the continent.
Very sad that we've seen a decrease in development assistance over the years to African countries. African countries have the most number of fragile states, and it's very important that we support them and provide them with the development assistance needed for them to get themselves out of that stuck.
Abbas Sheikh Abdul wants international leaders to see what African nations have to offer the world.
What other leaders from other parts of the world do is that first we need cooperation. We have to cooperate. And the second thing is that they need to put, you know, the perspective that people say people from Africa are from a lesser part of the world. And therefore we need to tell them that Africa is not a lesser part of the world. And we want them to have that perception that in collaboration we can contribute to excel the world.
We will be covering the UN General Assembly all week. You can catch live streaming of many of the speeches world leaders give at the UN on voaafrica.com, on Facebook, and on YouTube. And we'll have updates on the latest from New York on voaafrica.com and voanews.com. The World Food Program warns hundreds of thousands of starving Sudanese could die without urgent international assistance. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations World Food Program says time is running out to save the lives of many of the 1.5 million people who are facing famine or are on the brink of famine in war-torn Sudan. WFP says it is working to get food to people who have little or nothing to eat. Despite the security risks, it says aid workers have managed to support 5.4 million people with life-saving food aid this year. WFP Sudan spokesperson Lenny Kinsley says these efforts are paying off. Thousands of lives are being saved every day. But given the severity of the problem, she says these efforts are not enough.
Even though we are doing everything we can, it's just a drop in the ocean compared to the needs, not just in Sudan, but regionally. Around 36 million people have been pushed into hunger because of this ongoing war.
Speaking on a video link from Nairobi, Kenya on Tuesday, Kinsley said WFP was taking advantage of the reopening of the Adre border from Chad to send daily food convoys into the conflict-ravaged Darfur region. She says WFP has transported 2,800 metric tons of food into the Darfur region since the border crossing was reopened a month ago. Enough food aid for more than 250,000 people. While this is encouraging, she says a recent visit to Adre, Chad, where some 800,000 people have fled, made her realize how much more aid was needed to get on top of Sudan's food crisis. She says all the people she met in Adre were hungry and destitute. Despite receiving food assistance, she says many people are struggling to get by, eating one meal a day if they are lucky.
Like a teenage girl I met called Turaya, who lost her parents and is taking care of her younger siblings. Sometimes she's only able to offer them water instead of a meal. If that is the situation for people in a comparably safe and stable place, it is hard to imagine what people facing famine or at risk of famine in Sudan are going through.
The UN considers the Sudan conflict, which began in April 2023, to be the world's worst humanitarian crisis. More than 8 million people have been internally displaced by violence, and 2 million have fled to other countries. The UN says at least 25 million people need food and other aid. The World Food Program is urgently appealing for $600 million to provide life-saving food assistance over the next 6 months to millions of acutely hungry people. The UN agency warns it cannot stop widespread starvation and hunger-related deaths without the support of the international community. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1 202 258 3076. +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. U.S. Envoy Richard Norland and Egyptian Foreign Minister Badr Abdel Atti have stressed the need to end all foreign presence in Libya within a specific time frame in a manner that preserves the country's unity, stability, and sovereignty. That includes foreign forces, fighters, and mercenaries. Wolfgang Poschtei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
This would be extremely difficult. The reason is Turkish troops are supporting the Libyan army with army of the Government of National Unity in Tripoli, with training and high-tech combat systems, several army training bases. Furthermore, they are supported by about 1,000 Syrian mercenaries. Their purpose is the build-up of the Libyan army and, equally important, the deterrence of Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army, and to provide logistic support for other Turkish military operations throughout North and Central Africa. On the other side, Russian mercenaries provide the backbone of the LNA's air force and air defense, and a rapid reaction force for them to act as a tripwire in the case of an attack from the West. Moreover, they use LNA bases, as staging areas, refueling points for transport aircraft, and as logistic hubs for Russian mercenary operations throughout the Sahel region. So I would say, due to the crucial role the Turks and the Russians play for their respective Libyan partners, and because of their own strategic interests in Libya and beyond Libya, it is entirely unrealistic that they will depart from Libya anytime soon. What might be a little bit, but more realistic, is a return of the various mercenaries and opposition groups from Sudan, Chad and Niger into their own countries. But this will remain also quite a challenge.
The meeting also discussed supporting the Libyan-Libyan solution path and respecting the role of Libyan institutions leading to holding presidential and parliamentary elections simultaneously. Is there any momentum in Libya or within the UN to advance a possible solution?
Right now, there is some momentum, I would say, in context with the crisis around the CBL. After long-term CBL governor Al-Sadiq Al-Kabir was sacked by the Presidential Council, Huntsman has initiated three-party talks between the Presidential Council and their two rival parliaments to solve the question about the leadership of the CBL. HOR Chair Aguila Saleh wants to link this appointment of a new prime minister with the appointment of a new CBL governor, and that the new PM should replace GNU PM Abdulhamid Dabeba. This would be based on the Cairo agreement from last March between the HOR and the HCS about the establishment of such a new government. The High Council of State should endorse several suitable candidates and the HOR should select one of them. This might make sense, as both votings could be in the presence of Huntsman and other high-ranking Libyan and international observers to ensure transparency and give some kind of legitimacy. So I would say, if the new prime minister comes from the West and the new CBL governor from the East, this might work if the militias from Tripoli let them into the capital. And this is probably the biggest question.
The U.S. envoy to Libya said the decision by the Libyan Presidential Council to fire the governor of the Libyan Central Bank was a dangerous move that created another crisis in Libya. Norland said the U.S. believes there needs to be a swift move to restore confidence in the Central Bank of Libya. How does the CBL crisis contribute to prolonging the turmoil in Libya?
That's absolutely right. The CBL is the only one institution with access to the oil revenues. And this is exactly what it did unconditionally for all the governments in Tripoli until about a year ago. And this was much to the dismay of the other Libyans in the east and in the south. And as the replacement of Al-Kabir was of utmost importance for the Dabeba government to ensure its survival on the other side. So in other words, in a nutshell, access to CBL's money is crucial for all sides in Libya.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. Israel launched massive new airstrikes against Hezbollah militants in Lebanon on Monday, killing at least 490 people and injuring more than 1,600 others, according to Lebanon's health ministry. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from Washington, the latest strikes are escalating fears that conflict will spread across the region.
Israel striking more than 800 targets in Lebanon Monday, including the capital, Beirut, causing thousands to flee. Israel's Iron Dome intercepted rockets from Lebanon late Monday, but fears of a broader conflict in the Middle East remain. U.S. President Joe Biden telling reporters at the White House the United States is working with its counterparts in the region.
And we're working to de-escalate in a way that allows people to return to their homes safely.
Last week, Israel carried out an assassination operation using remotely controlled pagers that exploded, killing members of Hezbollah, a U.S.-designated terrorist group. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to continue Israel's military campaigns.
We do not wait for a threat. We anticipate it. Anywhere, in any arena, at any time, we eliminate senior officials, we eliminate terrorists, we eliminate missiles, and there's more to come.
Israeli military spokesperson Daniel Hagari warned Lebanese civilians on Monday to stay away from military depots.
Hezbollah intends to launch these weapons towards Israel, and we will not allow it. Stay away from them for your own protection.
The airstrikes prompted an emergency meeting of Lebanon's cabinet and warnings from the United Nations. Imran Riza is the UN Deputy Special Coordinator for Lebanon.
What we've seen over the last week has been dramatic. The consequences on civilians has been huge.
And while the White House said Monday it continues to seek a diplomatic solution, one analyst told VOA a ceasefire of the nearly year-old war between Israel and Hamas looks increasingly unlikely. Nimrod Goren is a senior fellow at the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C.
The possible ceasefire in Gaza is not the solution anymore because it's just not happening. So I think U.S. other diplomatic efforts, not clear how they will succeed in that.
The conflict began last October 7th when U.S. designated terror group Hamas attacked Israel, killing more than 1,000 people and taking 250 people hostage. Israel's military response has killed more than 41,000 in Gaza, according to the territory's health ministry, which does not distinguish between combatants and civilians in its count. Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Muslims account for less than 2% of the U.S. population, but as VOA's Ken Farbaugh reports, Muslim Americans' influence in U.S. elections is growing, driven largely by concerns over the continued war between Israel and Hamas.
In the Chicago, Illinois suburb of Bridgeview, also known as Little Palestine, workers at the Kawa serve a seemingly endless supply of coffee products to the Palestinian Americans rotating through the shop.
Anywhere you go in this area, you'll see people who are visibly Muslim.
Deanna Othman teaches at the local Islamic school and frequents the Kawa. The most important issue to Othman this election year is ending the war between Israel and U.S.-designated terrorist group Hamas. The war started with the Hamas attack on Israel last year that killed 1,200 people and led to the capture of 250 hostages. Since then, more than 41,000 Palestinians have died in Israel's counteroffensive, a number Israel says includes thousands of militants.
To win my vote, I would have to see a commitment to ending the genocide immediately.
Many in Little Palestine share Othman's concerns. Cook County, Illinois, encompassing Chicago and Bridgeview, has the largest Palestinian community in the country. Illinois is home to about 475,000 Muslim Americans, about 3.7% of the total population.
They do make up a substantial minority in Illinois, and they tend to vote Democrat.
Tabitha Bonilla is a professor of social policy at Northwestern University.
So in Illinois, it's unlikely that they would swing an election. But in a state like Michigan, there are estimated to be about 200,000 Muslim American voters. And just for reference, the gap between Republicans and Democrats in the last presidential election was 154,000 people. So if all 200,000 Muslim American voters decide either not to vote or to not vote Democrat, that could really make a difference in a swing state like Michigan.
These are folks in Michigan that know firsthand the impact of American-funded bombs.
Leila Elabed is a community political organizer in Michigan and sister of the state's Palestinian-American Congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib.
We want to shift course on the current policy and adopt a policy that will save Palestinian lives.
The Muslim community, not just in Michigan, but in nearly every state, is more active, more involved than ever before.
Keith Ellison is Minnesota's current attorney general and was one of the first Muslim American members of the U.S. Congress.
The Muslim community has stronger political muscles than ever before and is making itself heard.
Deanna Othman says she wishes she had other options on the ballot.
I feel like the majority of people in this area do not want to vote Democrat or Republican.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, estimates more than 2.2 million Muslim Americans are registered to vote in the United States this election year. It says that represents an increase of more than a million since the midterm election 2 years ago. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Bridgeview, Illinois.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.